October 2nd, 2012, in Vrindavan, Part 2, Bhagavatam, Canto 1, Chapter 9, Text 25-33.
So we're still the theme about preparation for death. And we talked a little bit about the role of thinking, feeling, and willing. So if I want to properly prepare for death, I have to invest my thinking, feeling, and willing in Krishna consciousness. All three, and they have to be in sync. And we have a seminar we teach about how to make good plans, and it has this concept of thinking, feeling, and willing as part of it. In 31, Srila Prabhupada talks about how ultimately we have pure senses. The soul is originally pure and also the senses. By material contamination, the senses assume the role of imperfection and impurity. So we're not killing senses, we're purifying them, we're cleaning them, we're reviving the actual senses. Then Bhishma is investing his thoughts in Krishna without it being some sort of a business deal. He's not giving something to Krishna with the idea of return. This is also preparing for death. Investing all of my thoughts in Krishna just out of love. And in text 30, where we have this, again, quotes from the 8th chapter, the real question to ask ourselves is, what is the essence of our lives? Not just what does it look like, but what is it actually? What's the essence of my feeling? What's the essence of my thoughts? What's really the most important thing in my life? And is it Krishna and, or is it just Krishna? Oh, could I trouble you to get me some water? I should have done it myself on the break, and I'm sorry. So many times we're Krishna and. Krishna and money, Krishna and health, Krishna and nice relationships, Krishna and, Krishna and. So that's, of course, the view of the demigods. Their view is Krishna and. They're smart enough to know they need Krishna, but it's still Krishna and. All right, our last theme is one that would take a whole lot more time than about the 20 minutes we're going to give to it. That is Varnashram. If I mention Varnashram in a Bhagavatam class, somebody will come up to me and say, wow, you talked about Varnashram. So first of all, I thought it interesting in 28 that all material dharma is within dharma artha kama moksha. In other words, you could take all of the varnashram duties and you could categorize them as dharma artha kama moksha. So that might be an interesting exercise if we had another hour. I could see a little game like that. We would take all of the duties from each of the varnas and each of the ashramas, and have them on little cards, and then we'd have categories of dharma, artha, kama, and moksha, and we'd ask everybody to put the different aspects of varnashram into the different categories. It'd be a cool game. Also, as I said, in 26, I just love this verse. We're basically looking at 26, 27, 28 right now. Counteraction by detachment and interaction by attachment. So the varnas and ashrams are meant to develop ultimately detachment from Maya and attachment to Krishna. It could be understood that way. It could also be understood that there's the pravritti marg and the nivritti marg. There's a path of attachment and the path of detachment. So there's the Karma Yoga is the path of attachment. Dhyan Yoga is the path of detachment. And Bhakti Yoga, Rupa Goswami says, you disqualified if you're either too attached or too detached. As I mentioned previously in the character of Bhishma, that Bhishma gives historical examples, not just theory. So everything he's presenting is with specific, real examples. By the way, even fictional examples, although here it says Bhishma gave historical examples, But even fictional examples are helpful, just like Narada Muni gave the story of Paranjana. So it's not that we're against all fiction. Srila Prabhupada and Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati used to tell fictional stories also to make a point. It's not that fiction is all untrue and nonfiction is all truth. If I told you the real story of some famous movie star, would that be about truth?
Yes.
No. It would be about falsity. And if we tell you the fictional story of Paranjana, that's about truth. So fiction is not necessarily untruth, and nonfiction is not necessarily truth. But there should be some examples, historical examples or metaphorical examples. In 27, it's interesting, more than interesting, and we can speak about this again at great length, that charity... Is that a monkey?
Yes.
That charity, the duties of kings, and the duties of women are all within Varnashram. Who was asking me? You were asking me if women are just a separate category. But if women are a separate category, then the duties of kings would also be a separate category. So sometimes people argue that women are a fifth class, because in the seventh canto of the Bhagavatam, the different varnas are described and then the duties of women are described, and that's their main argument, that women don't fit within the varnas. However, here, there's separate mention of charity, kings, and women and devotees. Does that mean women can't be devotees? Does that mean charity and the activities of kings are not within Varnashram? So this is silly. Just because something is also mentioned separately doesn't necessarily mean it's outside of those other categories. And let's look at the last sentence in 26. This is a point I've made a few times over the last few days. The brahmachari ashram is especially meant for training both the attached and the detached. So brahmachari ashram is for training. Prabhupada says this earlier on. Brahmachari ashram is a training ground for the prospective candidate. So one is not expected generally to stay in the brahmachari ashram. One may stay a brahmachari, just like Bhishma stayed a brahmachari. But Bhishma did not stay in the brahmachari ashram. There's quite a difference. So Bhishma was a lifelong brahmachari, but he was not lifelong in the brahmachari ashram. The brahmachari ashram is for children and for training. It is not generally for adults. The ashrams for adults are grihastha, vanaprastha, and sannyas. Brahmachari is for training. Generally, you don't stay in training your whole life. Prabhupada says, here, one who's attained detachment may at once adopt the fourth order. Also, other places will say the brahmachari can go directly to vanaprastha. I see that in our ISKCON, a lot of the people who we say are in the brahmachari ashram are actually not. They're actually in the vanaprastha ashram. As a practical thing. And people who try to stay in the brahmachari or brahmacharini ashram when they're 30, 35, it's a little strange. It's not generally psychologically healthy, nor does it make any sense if one understands the purpose of those ashrams. What is the whole purpose of Varnashram in general? Beginning with 26. The conception of four castes and four orders of life as planned by the Lord is to accelerate, what a wonderful way Prabhupada puts this, right at the beginning, purport 26, to accelerate transcendental qualities of the individual person. To accelerate transcendental qualities of the individual person so that he may gradually realize his spiritual identity. To accelerate. So here we see the relationship between Varnashram and Bhakti. Is Bhakti dependent on Varnashram? Not at all. Not at all. Rupa Goswami says Varnashram is not one of the angas of Bhakti. Bhakti is not dependent on Varnashram. Give me an example of someone who went to Bhakti immediately without going through Varnashram. No. I mean, he hadn't yet gone to school, but he was definitely a kshatriya. He was definitely within Varnashram. Narada? Okay, but he was a Shudra. Somebody outside of Varnashram. Someone who was outside of Varnashram and immediately...
Well, you have so many examples.
Oh, something. Give me one or two. Oh, ISKCON. Give me something from the Shastra. Mahari, the hunter. Another one.
Valmiki.
Another one.
Haridas
Thakur. Another one.
Vyasthi?
Sukadev was outside of Varnashram in a very different way than the others were mentioned. Yes. Whoa, hey. Thank you. That was excellent. Wow, you broke my paradigm. Thank you. Thank you. That was totally outside my box.
Humble behavior.
Very nice. Sukadev Goswami, outside Varnashram. Oh, wow. That was brilliant. Brilliant. Anyways, you don't need to be inside Varnashram in order to immediately take to bhakti. We don't need Magrari, Valmiki, Sukadev. They did not go through the process of Varnashram. They immediately took to bhakti. You do not need to go through Varnashram in order to go to Purbhakti. But it says here Varnashram will accelerate things. So if you can use Varnashram, it will accelerate things. My dear friends, can most of us follow the principles of Varnashram right now? No. I haven't met practically anybody who's really following the principles of Varnashram. If you meet one, please introduce me to them. Okay, there's a few, but not very many. There's not very many. Very, very few of us are perfect brahmacharis, perfect grahastas, perfect vanaprastas, perfect sannyasis, or perfect brahmins, kshatriyas, vaishyas, and sudras. Most of us are mixed up. Now, if some of you here are perfectly in your varna and ashram, please excuse me, but I haven't met very many. And many people's lives are a mess in terms of varna and ashram. Like you were asking me the other day, you know, what about people, they've already been divorced 3 times and they're 43 and they come to Krishna consciousness. I mean, I know one gentleman, Indian gentleman, so he was divorced and he decided he wanted to be a devotee. He was the only son of his parents and he was working to maintain his family. And the temple president said, I'm only going to recommend you for initiation if you're either properly a brahmachari or properly a grahasta. You have to be properly in an ashram. So either you have to quit your job and move into the brahmachari ashram, he's like 38 years old, you know, professional, working to maintain his elderly mother and father in India. So either that or you have to marry again. So you have to marry, you go to a woman and say, my dear lady, I am marrying you so I can get initiated. The woman will be very impressed. So I thought, you know, this is a really strange concept. So I understand it that there's plan A and plan B and all the way to plan Z. And even if you're on plan Z or Z, for those of us who come from the other side of the planet, you can still go back to Godhead. You know, if you can be properly situated in a varna and ashram, then it will accelerate things. It makes it easier. The purpose of Varnashram is it makes it easier. But if you can't do it, it doesn't matter. You're not dependent on it. It's not necessary. Just like in the West, we have all kinds of kitchen appliances that make cooking easier. They accelerate the cooking. We have blenders and microwave ovens and food processors, and spice grinders, and even if you bring them to India, they won't work. My daughter has a bread maker. It worked fine in Govardhan, but now in Mayapur it won't work. So it's like that, you know. Much of our ashram just won't work right now. You can have it and you can look at it, but you try to plug it in and turn it on and it won't do anything. It just isn't very functional. I know some people will disagree with me, but anyway, that's just my practical experience. But you can still cook in an Indian kitchen. I mean, it's a little bit more challenging. It takes a little longer. You have to do a lot of things by hand. But you can still do it. People do it all the time. So one can still cook, even in our, you know, messed up situations, whatever they may be. One shouldn't think that, well, my situation isn't perfect, that's in the Shastra. Not very many people have a perfect situation. If from the Shastra. If you do, then be very thankful. But most of us don't. Most of us have something about our situation that's a little funny. You know, that isn't quite according to Shastra. So someone may say, oh yes, I'm a perfect Grahastha Vaishya. So how do you make your money? Oh, with financial investments. Well, that's not exactly, you know, so like that. Yes, but that's the purpose. The purpose is to accelerate the transcendental qualities of the individual person so that he may gradually realize his spiritual identity. So whatever extent we can, to whatever extent we can adopt the principles of Varnashram, certainly we should do so. If there's parts of Varnashram that we can use in our present lives, then we should certainly do that. We shouldn't reject everything in Varnashram just because we can't follow everything. So I'm not going to say, well, I can't follow every single thing. Therefore, I won't follow anything. Like, according to Bhagavatam, I'm supposed to be wearing old torn clothing and matted hair right now. But that would be a little odd for the preaching. Probably in Vrindavan, I could get away with it. But in Vrindavan, probably nobody would even look twice. But in Mayapur, they would stop me from going in the temple. They have signs outside the Mayapur temple, you know. They're rather odd signs because they were written by people who don't know English and they're written in English. So they're rather interesting signs. Don't bring Bermuda into the temple room, it says. So I was thinking, well, can I bring Puerto Rico? But and you know, here I see the difference in Mayapur. Actually, the guards will stop you, and if you have shorts, what they call half pants here, they won't let you in, whereas here you can pretty much do anything. Vrindavan looks a little different. Vrindavan looks a little unique in the world. What happens here in Vrindavan? But in general, you know, we wouldn't want preachers going around with dreadlocks and old torn clothing. And you could say, well, it's in the Shastra. But if there's something one can adopt, or also in the Shastra it says in the Vanaprastha life, you're supposed to live outside without a shelter and just, you know, eat whatever grains are lying on the road. And so yeah, I could do that in Hawaii, but doing that in most of the rest of the world would be a little difficult. So when these things were written, the whole world was like Hawaii. It's a different climate, different culture. But if there's something we can take, you know, we can take the essence. Okay, the essence is simplicity. Okay, let me take simplicity. The essence is austerity. I might not be able to take the details. Like Bhagavatam also says the brahmachari should wear deer skin. Bhagavatam also says the brahmachari should have matted hair. And I have to carry a stick. So I don't even know how the sannyasis bring their sticks on the airplanes nowadays. I must have to check them. They're folding dandas now. Just see. Now that's not in the Shastra. Folding dandas. So this is again, we said that Bhishma knows how to take principles and adopt them for time, place, and circumstance. So we have to take what's the principles of Varnashram and how can I adopt that to my present circumstances. We should notice in 27 that the Angas of Bhakti are discussed. Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur mentions that they're discussed last, and he says they're discussed last to show, oh, that's nice, thank you, to show that they're the most important. Also, the Angas of Bhakti are not part of Varnashram. The Angas of Bhakti are not part of Varnashram. They're transcendental to Varnashram. And this is a big problem people have. They can't distinguish. Why do you think sometimes the Angas of Bhakti are confused with aspects of Varnashram? The Angas of Bhakti, what are the Angas of Bhakti? Hearing, chanting, memory. AC just went back home. Yeah. My room is like this all the time. All day. On, off, on. Open the window, close the window, unplug the stabilizer, plug the stabilizer, all day. Why do people sometimes confuse the Angas of Bhakti, hearing, chanting, remembering, worshiping the deity, with Varnashram?
Because we are not pure.
Yeah, well, that's a big reason. But what are the details of Varnashram and Bhakti that sometimes get confused? Hmm? Which duties specifically?
Don't cry.
Huh? much in ISKCON is the problem. But why do some people think that some of the angas of bhakti, they think they're actually varnashram duties, some of the varnashram duties they think are angas of bhakti, they can't tell which is which? Why is there some confusion? What duties in varnashram look very much like the angas of bhakti?
Offering the food to God.
Is that a duty in varnashram? That's a duty for, that's just bhakti, that's for everyone. What duties, what are the duties in varnashram that look very much like bhakti? There's some duties of one of the varnas, some of the ashrams that look very much like bhakti.
Serve Gautam.
Serving, everybody has to serve, that's Sanatana Dharma.
Grandma's preaching.
Yes, yes, what?
Grandma's preaching.
Yes, Brahmins. It's the second brilliant thing you do. You should be sitting here, and I should be sitting there. So the brahmanas, the duties of the brahmanas, are very much like the duties of bhakti. If you're worshipping the deity, are you engaged in one of the angas of bhakti, or are you engaged in one of the occupations of the material occupations of a brahman? Hard to say, isn't it? Now, the others are obviously quite different. If you're digging wells and planting trees and building schools because you're a kshatriya, that's obviously not one of the angas of bhakti. You can spiritualize it. It's not that Maharaj Yudhisthira was doing material activities because he was offering them to Krishna. But those are varnashram duties. They're not angas of bhakti. But the duties of, not all the duties of a brahmana, but many of the duties of a brahmana are also duties of bhakti, which is why being a brahmana is so favorable for bhakti. Because if you're a brahmana, your material duties and your spiritual duties are practically the same. External, your behaviors are practically the same. All you need to it's a small shift to turn them from material to spiritual. So it's much easier for someone who has a Brahmin nature to spiritualize their activities, because the thoughts, feelings, and behaviors, the behaviors are already spiritual. You just have to change the thoughts and feelings. Whereas if you're, you know, milking cows, or you're running a government, or you're making pots, or something like that, it's a little harder. You know, it's a little bit more of a stretch. Of course, it can still be done. That's one of the main reasons why there's a confusion. There's another one that I can't remember right now. Oh well. Sorry about that. I want to look at text 27. And the purport's a very, 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 very long purport. And in third paragraph from the end. To get freedom from anger, one should learn how to forgive. To be free from unlawful desires, one should not make plans. By spiritual culture, one is able to conquer sleep. By tolerance only can one conquer desires and avarice. Disturbances from various diseases can be avoided by regulated diets. By self-control, one can be free from false hopes. And money can be saved by avoiding undesirable association. That reminds me of a man who told me, if you want to be happy in your marriage, make sure all of your wife's friends have your same standard of living or lower. Don't let your wife have friends with a higher standard of living, so she'll want to imitate them. Money can be saved by avoiding undesirable association. By practice of yoga, one can control hunger, and worldliness can be avoided by culturing the knowledge of impermanence. Dizziness can be conquered by rising up. Now, I can't figure that one out, because I had a time recently I was going through dizziness, and when I stood up, it was really bad. When I stood up, it got worse. So, and then I went to look this up, and I thought, there's something about dizziness, and I looked it up. Dizziness can be conquered by rising up. The only way I could conquer dizziness was by lying down, so I was confused by that. False arguments can be conquered by factual ascertainment. Talkativeness can be avoided by gravity and silence. And by prowess, one can avoid fearfulness. Perfect knowledge can be attained by self-cultivation. So, I'm sure you could talk about this for a few months. Wonderful section. I'll simply point out to you that it is there. then another thing that I just simply want to point out, that it is here. We do not have time to discuss it, but it is here. Yes. Okay, so there's different rules for different, each of the varnas and ashrams have different dharma, and I talked about this the other day. Why would we divide the thousands of different occupations into four categories? What benefit is that? Because each category has particular dharmas that apply to them. But here Bhishma is giving nine that should apply to everyone. So this is in text 26, second paragraph. Again, we do not have time to discuss this. However, I just want to point out to you, this exists, and this is where it is. Someone asked me not too long ago, do we have a set of moral principles, moral rules? And I refer them to this purport. One, not this is all human beings, doesn't matter your varna, your ashram, anything. One, not to become angry. Two, not to lie. Three, to equally distribute wealth. Four, to forgive. Five, to beget children only by one's legitimate wife. That doesn't mean use contraception with the rest of them. Six, to be pure in mind and hygienic in body. Seven, not to be inimical towards anyone. Eight, to be simple. Simple doesn't mean foolish. Bhishma was obviously not foolish. And nine, to support servants and subordinates. Make sure that the people that you're taking care of are actually taken care of. I would, if you haven't already done so, really suggest a thorough reading of the purports of text 26 and 27 about Varnashram. They're very instructive, and I apologize that it is simply impossible for us to do that here. Okay. We talked about today. Well, we started off with the end of chapter 8. How Yudhisthira's love keeps Krishna in Hastinapur. Yudhisthira is enchanted by Krishna, who's enchanted by him. That Yudhisthira's actions are in sync with the Lord. And therefore he's above sin, although he thinks that he's in sin. We talked about then in chapter 9, the bhava, the mention of anubhava in the verse, the bhava between the Lord and his devotees, how Krishna is loving his devotees are loving him. We talked about how Bhishma is an expert counselor who can apply truth to time, place, and circumstance. How he dealt with Yudhisthira's anxiety by switching to another topic altogether about Yudhisthira's suffering. And how that's the control of destiny, which is actually Krishna, your friend. And that we cannot know the plan of Krishna, but we can know the essence of his plan, which is simply an increase of love between Krishna and the devotees. And then this afternoon, we talked about Bhishma's character, how apparently he was worldly, but he was a devotee, his great knowledge, his wonderful actions, his ability to enter into loving samadhi, how one should prepare for death, and the place of Varnashram in Bhakti. So we have about 12 minutes. Somebody, let's have questions we can't answer. We're going to be finishing the chapter tomorrow. Tomorrow, remember, we're at 10. 10 until noon, and that will be it, and then you get to have another teacher. So for those of you who found me disturbing, you will not have me for much longer. Thank you for giving me an opportunity to study the Shastra in depth in Vrindavan. So questions on anything we discussed today, but especially what we did this afternoon. Yes?
Already the epitome found that this Varnashram is practically not possible in Kali Yuga right now.
Mm-hmm.
And this has no direct relation to Bhakti also.
Yes.
Then so much description and discussion about Varnashram, then please elaborate.
Okay, that's a very good question. So if we can't do Varnashram perfectly right now, and if it's not required for bhakti, why is there so much discussion about Varnashram? Why did Prabhupada talk about Varnashram so much? Very simple, because Varnashram can accelerate bhakti. It's a good field for bhakti. And there's at least some of the things that we can accept. It's not all or nothing. It's not that because we can't accept anything, we can't accept everything, we can't accept anything. There are certain aspects that we can accept, and we can try to move towards it, at least to some extent. But if we start thinking that that's all we can do, or that that's the most important thing to do, then we're really making a very big mistake. But we can certainly do some of it. And I think that it really, I would really suggest that we study, instead of the details of Varnashram, more the principles of Varnashram. What are the principles and how we can apply those principles? Like I talked the other day about protection. And I talked about it, but maybe it would be helpful to actually see it. So this sort of of the varnas is that each varna has a sphere of protection. Right? We already talked about this. What do brahmanas protect?
Egypt.
Truth. What do the sakyas protect? People. What do the Vaishnavas protect?
Cows, natural resources.
Animals in general. Cows specifically, but animals and natural resources. What do the Sudras protect? The arts and the skills, the crafts. Okay? What are the Brahmins supposed to produce for society?
Knowledge.
What are the Kshatriyas supposed to produce?
Protection
and care. They're like big father and mother. What are the Vaishyas supposed to produce?
Wealth.
Kshatriyas collect and we distribute wealth, Vaishyas produce it. What do the Sudras produce?
Service.
Yeah. Service. What else? Goods, entertainment. And goods. From the Sudras, you're going to get your chairs and your... Right? Your rugs and your chairs, tables. Goods. So those are principles.